Welcome to hour two of this special edition of the Internet Advisor. That's right. Those of you who heard hour number one are going to, I hope, have the pleasure of tuning in to hour number two, which is part of our podcast. And for those of our affiliates that run both hours of our program, welcome. We're delighted to be able to do it on our home station, WJR. We only were able to live broadcast the first part because the Detroit Lions are in town with their preseason. Stay by. We've got some answers for questions coming up next. Welcome to the part of the program where we normally are answering your calls, questions you have about the things that are going wrong, that are going bump in the night on your computer or on your internet connection or whatever it may be. And we do our very best with our tech experts in here to help you out. And what's happened, by the way, today is that our program was preempted on WJR, our home station, by the Detroit Lions preseason football game. And as a result of that, we're not able to take live calls. But Ed Rudell, during the week, and Cal as well, and myself, we see a lot of your questions come through on our comment section on the website or through emails through the website and the contact form. And it takes some time. We all take some time to take a look at those things and to try to do our best to answer them. And so Ed's put some of those questions together, and he's got some answers that we're going to be looking at. And he's also got some basic things for Windows 10, like where's safe mode when you need it? And I want to find out about that myself. But in any case, this second hour, we'll be focusing on the questions that you folks have sent in to us. And so, I'm going to ask you, actually, to step up to the mic and talk. This is Cal Carson, our Mac expert. Something that happened this last week that kind of, I think, threw us all for a loop, certainly me, because I have had a kind of a smug attitude about malware and our Apple computers and operating system. You know, that, can't touch that, as MC Hammer used to say.
Well, I don't know. I've never, you know, I've been
That's
Apple.
Me. That's me.
Yeah. I've been an Apple person for a long, long, long time, and I've never gotten that quite that comfortable with it. Although I will say I'm more comfortable with my Mac than I am with my Windows machine.
Yeah, right.
And because way back a long time ago, back during something called System 7 and System 8 on the Mac, that operating system, we used to use a antivirus program called Disinfectant, which was a free one. It was very good. It was probably about the only one or two of them that were actually out back then and that during that time. And there wasn't really much going on as far as viruses or stuff like that, but it was fun to turn it on and watch the little needle do the animation of the injection. However, in the past week or so, Apple has issued out a update for all its iOS devices.
And we might add, by the way, with a good deal of urgency, this wasn't, when you have time. The press that I was reading was saying, you got to do this.
Yeah, they said it's a security update, so they wanted to make sure that you got the vulnerability closed up ASAP.
Right.
So they suggested strongly that you put it in as soon as possible. It's only about 22 meg in size. It took me all of a whopping 15 minutes to download and install, reboot it, bring it back up, and everything was hunky-dory at that time. And I've done it on all my devices, and they've been running fine since then. I haven't had any issues or anything like
now,
that.
Now, in the past, Cal, you've talked about, with some updates come by, that you kind of wait to see if there are some other problems that arise before you would put it on your own devices. In this case, you didn't follow that logic,
because
right?
Because it's a security update,
right. Okay,
and they weren't, you know, like rewriting different applications and stuff that are embedded within the operating system, I feel comfortable putting those in almost immediately.
Okay.
And
okay.
I generally will always, I carry a couple of phones, and I have one that is like an iPhone 4S, and I usually use that as my beta tester within my own domain, and I'll load it on
Sacrificial
there.
Sacrificial lamb.
That's a good answer. That is a good answer, Ed. But I'll load it on that one because it's older, it's slower, and it is the lowest of the iPhones out there that will take the new updates.
Oh, I got you.
If it doesn't kill that one, I know it's going to work on everything else.
That's the canary in the mine, right?
Very much. Yeah, if I look over and that rascal's laying on its side in the bottom of the cage, I know it's pretty much not a good deal.
So I understand it's kind of a little a mystery involved in this, in the sense of that it wasn't an Israeli.
It appears that it's a group out in Israel. It's called the NSO Group, and they pride themselves in being able to sneak into electronic devices and capture information and sneak out without leaving any trails behind. And evidently, they were able to take advantage of these three exploits that were in the operating system, and word got out that they could. And so what Apple did is they put in patches to close those exploits up. I had heard, but I'll have to double check it again, but they actually had a way where they could go in and send you a text message, and then that would start the exploit up where they could search around and go and look at things.
Wow. And the exploit would have, you know, the malware would have allowed what to happen if they got into your phone or computer?
They could remotely watch everything that you're doing capture keystrokes and information like that and be able to send it back to them so they could come back later and look for other stuff.
Okay. So this was a pretty serious intrusion.
Yes. And so I say to everyone, just go ahead and install that update. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take that long to do. You can even tell your phone, install it while I'm sleeping. And by the time you wake back up, it'll be in there. And if you're using touch recognition on your phone, on your iOS device, where you use your fingerprint, you'll know it's installed the next day, because when you go to pick up the phone, you'll have to actually type in your password, and then the fingerprint recognition will start working.
Right, exactly. There's a four-digit number that you have to put in, which is your passcode. And it won't allow you to open it with your fingerprint. You got to use that four-digit.
It depends on if you use a four-digit passcode, like me, I use an alphanumeric passcode where you have to type it in.
Okay, that's good, because that's an indication then that it's already happened. All right, Ed, you're up next. We've got some things that you've been looking at this week, helping some folks with, and some big questions we want to find out about. Like, for instance, where is safe mode on Windows 10? Coming back in just a minute with the Internet Advisor, get some help for you for your problems. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the Internet Advisor, and this is probably as good a time as any to remind you that as we progress into the fall and winter, and then into spring of 2017, a lot of times sports events at MSU, whether they happen to be football or basketball, will intervene, and we won't be on the air live on our flagship station, WJR. So you say, well, then how am I going to get my question answered? Actually, it's real simple. Anytime you have a problem and you'd like to get some help with it, there's one of two things you can do. You can go to the homepage, internetadvisor.net, and at the bottom of our show notes, very handy little thing, there's a whole comment box that you can simply type in what your question is, and you'll enter into your email, and then just send that to us. And lickety-split, Ed, Cal, and I, and Gary, we'll be seeing that there, and can take some time to look at it and answer the questions. The other way of doing it would be to go to internetadvisor.net, and at the top of the page, there's a contact button. Click on that, and you can send us an email message that way as well. But we do want to keep on hearing from you, and we will keep on posting your questions and some answers that we have found. So, Ed, let's step into the business here. What's one of the questions you worked on this week?
Well, Ben, one of our friends, Ben Carpenter, who's been on the show with us many times, asked me, and you've asked me this too. It's like a two-part question. I can answer it in this way. So Ben asks, why is it that it seems like Windows 10 is always connected and communicating through the internet? You know, my modem light is blinking rather fast, and I'm not doing anything. That's the only device. What is it Windows 10 doing? And I'd like to say the ET phone home thing, but one of the things it could be doing is Windows is possibly sharing out all the Windows updates that you've received. So there's a way of going in. So one of the things Microsoft has done is there's a way that your computer, not only when you download updates, that you can also distribute those updates to the people on your network or your internet service provider's network. So not all this traffic is coming down to from Microsoft and coming from who knows where across the country. That maybe it's coming from Warren or Brandon or Lincoln Park, and it's coming through your Comcast or Charter or WoW network, and it's not going out to the church. true internet, it's staying on that provider's network, if you will.
Oh.
So your Microsoft keep track of this, and it actually, remember, it's sort of like peer-to-peer networking.
I was going to say, it's like BitTorrent, isn't it?
It's like BitTorrents, or what we used to do for Napster is what you share, you download and share. So yeah. Microsoft, and all of that was illegal back then, because mm-hmm. you're downloading illegal content. But a lot of providers, what they do, if they've used... they're leveraging that mm-hmm. that model, if you will, this mesh networking, if you will,
yeah.
so that I could download part of the update from you, Foster, and part of it, well, not from Cal, because he's a Mac user, and then and stuff like that. So basically, you're downloading these updates from dozens of sources.
Ah.
Oh, absolutely fabulous. I pay more for my cable bill, I pay more for my software, and they take some of my bandwidth away.
Correct. Guys appears in uploads. That's true.
That's interesting. That's an interesting perspective on it. Yeah. Oh, my wow. goodness. I hadn't thought of that.
So, that's one of the things. If your computer's sitting there and you're just seeing network activity through your cable modem light, mm-hmm. because you know that when you shut off your computer completely, if you're hardwired or wireless, mm-hmm. that you notice that cable modem light is completely out because you know there's no network activity
because
right. your computer shut off. Why is it? You know, and you know when you're streaming videos and the light just seems to, you know, you think it's going to burn through that little plastic panel it has in the front when you're streaming movies. And that was, in essence, what Ben's question is. And that's one of the things your computer could be downloading. Okay. And there's a way of turning that off. You can actually tell Microsoft that, no, I do not want to download from my neighbors and friends and basically upload. You can go into in the control panel under settings, updates and security.
Mm-hmm.
You click on Windows updates, and in the advanced section, you have a way to choose how security updates are delivered. And in essence, is your computer delivering security updates to other people?
Okay.
In that sense, by answering that one question, say, I'd like to go, I want to go to Microsoft. Okay. And this answers another question of yours, Foster, is that you had, and you brought it in, you talked to me about this last week on the ride in, is why is it that Microsoft updates seem to always happen at the worst time?
Yes, the most inopportune times.
One of the things you can do is in the same section, you can basically say, I'm running on a metered network.
Okay.
I do not want to receive security updates all the time. Okay. Let me decide when I do my security updates. And that, because if I'm on a metered network, say I'm using my phone as an mm-hmm. example, a hotspot, I don't mm-hmm. want to receive a 1 gigabyte update through my phone when I'm trying to send an email message. So Microsoft has provided the ability that you can say I'm running a metered connection, and a lot of people keep it that way permanently. And that way they can meter, if you will, when they receive their security updates.
On that same control panel, Ed, can you like turn everything off or turn everything on? Do they have like a switch setting for that? Or do they ship it with everything on and then you have to cherry pick what you want to turn off?
It's basically turned on that way.
Yeah.
Yes.
By default.
Yep. And as a matter of fact, one of the things in this section, you had the ability to, and I just got an update on my computer. one of the things you can also do is choose if you want to have report information to Microsoft. But if you turned it off, Cortana would not work. So if you wanted to not disclose your geolocation or did not want Microsoft to be able to grab certain information off your computer on your Bing searches, Cortana stopped working. So, but at least in Windows 10, I had the ability to turn that on and off, and then Cortana would stop working. Well, now with this new Windows August 2nd update, anniversary update, you don't even have the ability to turn that off anymore. So, so that was one question that we had from one of our listeners,
right.
Ben Carpenter, asked a good question, and we were able to tackle three different subjects in it. And basically, these options are available under your control panel under updates and security.
Okay, and this is with Windows 10?
Windows 10.
Okay. Under control panel and the updates and share. Is that the one that when you click on the down right and the right hand side, it says show all, the segments that it has little icons there that shows you the different things that you can get into with your. I have my Mac in front of me, so I can't talk about what.
I'm trying to bring it up now, so I don't know.
I think it gives you the chance to show all your settings. I think that's the deal. And then you have little icons within there that shows you what you can get into from that point on.
Nope, I don't know what you're talking about.
I think
no
it permanently
idea.
Wrinkled his brow.
You're not a very... Okay.
I'm sorry about that, Ed. Okay. I didn't mean to throw a complete wrench in there. So, no. Ben Carpenter, thank you very much for asking that question and getting us going. By the way, metered connection, just quickly again, what is a metered connection?
Say you have a mobile hotspot on your phone.
Right.
Right? And I know personally I'm limited to 2 gigabyte of mobile data on my phone, right?
Okay.
Because it and say if I'm traveling and I just wanted to send that email, but I know there's a possibility that I'm going to get a 1 gigabyte or a 500 megabyte download security update from Microsoft. I do not want my computer getting a security update while I'm on my hotspot because it's metered, and I'm paying for that through my cellular provider. And if I go over it, you know, I'm going to be paying big bucks.
Yep.
So that's what a metered connection is.
Okay, good. That's excellent. By the way, with Max.
No.
I was going to
ask have
you
any of that.
you go to the App Store, you go to Software Update, and you pull what you want when you want to pull it.
Okay, nothing comes down automatically.
No.
Not even some security updates like the ones we talked about a little bit before?
To my knowledge, no. I'll double check to make sure, but to my knowledge, no.
There's kind of a dilemma there. You know, if there's something really serious out there, like this most recent one with iOS.
Well, Microsoft didn't do it automatically either. They were always optional until 95, when Windows 95 came out. No, when Windows 98 came out. Remember, Microsoft, you could set it to only check once a week or something like that with Windows 95. Mm-hmm. But then later on, they would, you know, all the time, it checks every night. And now it's every day. Remember we used to say, oh, update your antivirus once a week? Mm-hmm. You know, you receive antivirus updates several times a day.
Sometimes. Oh, yes. Yeah, Windows Defender is constantly doing it.
You know, and there's actually, and to be straight about it, there's two schools of thought on that. Do you want an automatic system where you don't have to worry about those sort of things,
right.
Don't have to worry about you forgetting it? Or do you want a system where you control it? It's your choice, whichever way you want to particularly go.
Right. Got it.
And I just think in a few years, Apple may find themselves in that spot, too, where they're going to have to force those updates.
Yep. All right, back to answer more of your questions here on the Internet Advisor with our tech experts. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown, Cal Carson, and Ed Rudell. And we are doing our very best to help folks out there who get in contact with us during the week and send us their questions. Thank you to Ben Carpenter, our old friend, who had some very good questions about some of the things that he sees happening with Windows 10. Cal, I understand that there is a big update coming very soon. From Apple.
Well, our traditional yearly time of year around September is when we start talking about that new iPhone. And
Lord, yes.
So everybody's projecting the next iPhone will be, are we ready? Drum roll.
Gold.
iPhone 7.
Okay.
Unlike our fine friends over at the Windows factory where they have a problem with numbering things in sequence over there.
or even coming up with a decent phone. I mean, it is decent, but I'm sorry, marketing a decent phone.
Yeah, it is a decent phone. I'm surprised it didn't take off better than what it did because it really kind of looked cool. And if you matched it directly with the operating system on Windows 10, it was a cool-looking situation.
Yep.
It had a nice...
It's gone. It's not there anymore, so let's not talk about it. It's not even
painful.
That's
my wife's phone. This is what's...
It's not even painful. It's just, you know, the marketing team, I just don't understand. And we've said this about Microsoft in the past, about sometimes you just don't understand that whole marketing concept, where they're going. Are they even talking to their development departments? You know, and you just got to shake your head sometimes.
There's a little bit of a disconnect there somewhere down the line. At any rate, so the rumor is, of course, everything is going to be rumor until Apple says so, of course. But the rumor is that we'll have iPhone 7 coming out next. And the biggest controversy to the whole thing coming out is... Well, they have a headphone jack on.
Oh, yes.
I know.
Oh,
isn't that
right?
You know, I sort of thought it was ridiculous at the beginning. I mean, come on, people. I mean, all the other innovations that are coming out and they're crying about a headphone jack.
Yeah, because this is the same thing that went on about, what, 10 years ago when something called a floppy disk went away. And Apple was the first one to do it. And everybody goes,
oh, were they? I didn't know that.
Yes, they were the first ones to say, we're not going to do a floppy disk anymore. And everybody went nuts. The world's going to come to an end.
Were they the first ones to get rid of the optical drive, too? Am I right? Or was somebody else?
They eliminated it from their laptops.
They eliminated it from their laptops, except for one.
Their laptops was pretty much done, except for the pros. And even the pros are probably going to be without them in a little bit.
Now, when I, but this, on the second, when I thought of the headphone jack. I was thinking all those people that bought $200 headsets and all those people that use the credit card swiper that plugs into the headphone jack on your iPhones. What are they going to do? Well, they're going to have to come up with
I know for sure the credit card swiper guys like Square and stuff like that, which basically gives you the swiper when you sign up for your service. They'll be making them for the Lightning connection. You'll just stick it in the bottom of the phone instead of the top.
So one less place to collect lint.
Exactly. And one less place for moisture to go inside the phone.
Yeah.
Which is one of the big things. And then the other rumor was they're going to probably try to make the phones a little more moisture resistant as well. And then those are about the biggest things that they're talking about in relation to that.
Size, so, everything's like that's pretty much the same.
Size is going to stay the same. Basically, it looks like it's going to be the iPhone 6 just wrapped up in 7 with a little more features in it, minus a headphone jack, and an improved camera on the back as well, back and the front as well.
Wonder what improvements can be made other than something like, for instance, as major.
Well, memory.
In quotes. Well, yeah, exactly.
Memory,
but I mean, in terms of
camera.
Yeah, in terms of the changes, though, that, you know, eliminating the headphone jack is probably one of the bigger ones that they can do. I don't think if anybody else has done that, have they?
No,
they'll be the first one to do that.
Now the big innovation supposedly is the rumor on the next iPhone, which will be allegedly iPhone 8, and that is they want to eliminate using aluminum and plastic.
Oh,
and that it would be edge-to-edge glass on the front.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought they already had a glass-to-back iPhone at one point.
Oh, this one had a glass back to it, but it was an aluminum frame around it.
Okay.
This is supposed to be, I guess, all glass when it's all said and done. But, you know, this is speculating further above.
Sure.
But this is something that Johnny Ive and someone else wanted really to have.
Mm-hmm.
And they figure it'll probably be on the next iteration, like iPhone 8, because it'll be the 10th year anniversary for iPhone.
Oh, my goodness. 10 years.
It's
remarkable to think about that, isn't it?
It's crazy when you think about it. I mean, that much time has gone by, and it just seems like it's only been, you know, a few years.
Yeah, and people have said, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, that there's not a whole lot more that can be done with phones. They all basically look pretty much the same.
I think the only thing left to do with a phone, in my opinion, is if they go to, I guess, those OLEDs, where you can actually fold the phone without it breaking.
Oh, okay. Bendable screen. Yeah.
If you can get like where you can put one in your back pocket, sit down, and it doesn't break the phone, that's probably about the next level I think they're going to be going for.
But it's like they're tweaking things, and you wonder, you know, is there really a next big thing? Like when the iPhone came out, it wasn't that phones hadn't existed beforehand. It was just the way they put things together.
Well, the phones really didn't have a true graphical interface on them at that time.
Yeah, Peter was the Palm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They had a graphical user interface.
And the Palm really wasn't a phone. It was more of a PDA that just happens to have a module that you could stick in it to make it into a phone.
I love that. I love my Trio. I love that for many years.
Which came out, the Trio or the iPhone first? I thought the Trio was
out. Trio was out for a long time.
Was like a PDA with that happened to be a phone. And
yeah, as a matter of fact, I had a handspring, which was a version of it.
Yes, yes.
And you could take off the back and where the battery would go, and you could plug in this cellular module, and it made it into a cell phone.
That's interesting, because that's almost like what's it, Project Ara that Google had. And everybody was kind of down on. But that's interesting that it was a modular approach. I hadn't remembered that.
I still have that phone. I should dig it out of my basement before I get ready to give it back to the e-recycler. But
I know we're wandering around a little bit, but what do you think about that, the business of a modular phone that you can replace components? Do you think that's something that's one difference? You know, that's one way of differentiating yourself as a cell phone?
I think... had they not came out with the wearables, like the Fitbit and the watches and stuff like that, that would have probably caught on. But I don't think people really want to go through the trouble of, oh, now I want my phone to be a Geiger counter. I'm going to tear it apart. with the innovations with
RFD?
RFD and that sort of thing that they can build right into the phone.
Yeah.
A lot of those functions can be right in the phone itself. Mm. So it's just a matter of writing the software to make those functions work.
I wonder that, you know, anymore when I think of buying my next phone, is there anything out there worth making the big jump for? Or is the battle going to be now that they're going to begin to lower the price on some of these pretty fancy smartphones in order to be able to compete? I'm seeing, for instance, some coming out of China. I think it was one called the Honor, which was essentially a really good smartphone that the Chinese were putting out that was going to cost very little. Matter of fact, you and I were talking about that, getting a phone from, Alibaba?
The Alibaba or Amazon has a number of these GSM phones that you can get, and you could buy them for $60-$70, brand new, and then you just buy the AT&T or T-Mobile chip, throw it in there, or an Orange network over there, and or get a pay-as-you-go, and they're supposed to be really good. I mean, there's even a few Apple clones out there.
I can't wait to see those commercials where they have the guy from, used to be with Verizon, now he's with Sprint, standing on the wall of China going, can you hear me now?
But there's kind of a serious thing about this, that the capabilities, at least in my mind, the capabilities that you used to be only able to spend a lot of money, like, what was it, the iPhone 6 Plus was like $800 or something like that?
Yeah.
The new Samsung 7, I think, is somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
You know, who in the world is going to pay that much for that piece? That's more than most people pay for their computers.
Well, nobody ever, very, very few people ever pay that full price straight out for a phone.
No, you're right. But we're beginning to feel that because it's now a monthly payment that's on my bill.
Yeah, it's $20 a month every month.
Yeah,
for 2 years.
But if you're leasing it, then at the end of the 2 year period, then you go out and you get another phone. You don't have to pay anything for it. You can lease a phone, like Sprint, you pay it like a $25 a month fee for that phone, and as soon as Apple comes out with a new phone, you can walk in, turn in another phone, and get the new one.
But then you go back to paying a monthly fee for that phone.
Well, you keep paying a monthly fee for the phone.
Is it,
you're leasing the phone.
And what I see happening is that some of these other manufacturers, like the Chinese manufacturers, are coming in with cheaper phones and essentially saying, okay, but we can offer you some of the same benefits with our piece of equipment that you're getting with this much more expensive phone. Why bother spending all that money?
Well, on an Android platform, yeah, you can do that. On an Apple platform, you won't be able to do that because you're not going to get the operating system on a cheaper phone.
Okay. So it's definitely going to be an Android kind of thing. All right. Yeah. Hey, Ed, when we come back, let's wrap up. We've got some other things to talk about here, about questions people have asked us, and also some things you want to tell us about the Windows 10 operating system. Back with the Internet Advisor in just a moment. Thank you for joining us for the Internet Advisor in our second hour here, in which we've been answering some questions and kind of discussing some of the things that are coming up in the future with Apple, with phones, and all sorts of other things. Ed Rudell, Cal Carson in studio. My name's Foster Brown, and thank you for joining us, by the way. And to our engineer, Rich Lisinski, thank you very much. And Logan Standifer, our producer, who helped us put this together. And by the way, we are looking forward to being back with you at a regular time from 4 to 6 this coming week here. I will be on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, our flagship station, WJR, hopefully at that time. Who knows? Schedules change quite a bit, especially in the fall. But we have a Labor Day weekend coming up, and we've got some really neat stuff. I've met a fellow from the Comerica Park is going to be with us. The CIO for the Tigers is going to be on, talking about some of the
Is he coming in the studio? I'll bring my wife.
Yeah, there you go. Technology. He's going to talk about some of the technological things they're doing in the stadium there.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's coming up this coming week. Thank you to Gary Baker who arranged that. All right, Ed, let's go back to you and talk about some of the other letters that you've gotten from our listeners with questions.
Yeah, we had Connie that called in and
and
sent us an email concerning a problem. She has an infection. It looks like it got into Firefox, and every time she reboots her computer and does a scan, it basically Malwarebytes and Microsoft Defender basically tell her that the infection shows back up. The Microsoft Defender doesn't able to remove it, but Malwarebytes says it removes it. She reboots, it's back again. And how can she get rid of it? So it sounds like she's done a lot of these preemptive things that she should. She has a good antivirus scanner, and she's downloaded Malwarebytes and is scanned, and it just can't remove it. So what I recommended is, and she actually gives the file name. The Trojan says is Win32 Covter KOVTER.1. So she gave me the name of the Trojans that are on there, and now this is where, and we're going back to when the IT and the D guys were there. Weeks ago, and they basically said, just Google it. And not to be condescending, but sometimes there's a lot of information that could be provided in email and error messages. And sometimes just typing the exact error message will help. So, but in this instance, like, you know, Microsoft Office has detected this error, you know, and then it gives you the error. You know, you type that in, you can go to Bing or Google and type in that error message, and you can a lot of times get some pretty good results. Now, what I do in this instance, because she used Malwarebytes or Windows Defender, and they both identified slightly different names for the same thing, and she wanted to know what PUPs were, which she had 45 PUPs. So that's potentially unwanted programs.
Right, exactly.
And some of them are coming back. What I recommend is going into Google and typing in Malwarebytes space and then the name of the rootkit or the Trojan. Say unable to remove. So, you know, just type in Malwarebytes unable to remove, and then you type in the COVTEX.32 or whatever the name of the file was. And a lot of times that'll take you right to the Malwarebytes user form, or you can actually go to malwarebytes.com and go into the user form, and they'll provide you step-by-step instructions on how to remove those. If their automated antivirus programs cannot remove it, a lot of times they'll provide additional instructions in there. The other thing is, in this instance, Malwarebytes says, we have a rootkit scanner. So you can go to the download Microsoft's rootkit scanner, and then you can also download it and try to run it and see if it removes it as well. So
So Malwarebytes has its own?
Yes, it does.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, we have that link on the internetadvisor.net in our toolkit.
Oh, good.
So we have
that's important. Let me step back to that, because I think, Cal, you've contributed that too, haven't you, to the toolkit?
I've dumped one or two things out there, nowhere near to the multitude of Mr. Riddell, but I've put a few things out there.
So I just want to let people know, when you go to our site, internetadvisor.net, up on the toolbar there, it says toolkit. Ed's put a lot of very valuable resources
in there. A lot of it's starting to not show its age, but it's there. You know, Malware has still got has a valid antivirus programs in there, and step-by-step instructions are there, yes.
Okay, good. So I just want to make sure that people knew that they can go there on a regular basis to get that kind of thing.
Right.
Excellent.
You know, before we get into the next issue with Ed, I came across something.
I don't have issues. I fix issues.
Snap.
I'm sorry,
Cal. Touché, my friend, touché.
Can you tell these guys work close to one another?
If you're at home cleaning out your house, or you're cleaning someone else's house, and you just happen to come across something called an Apple One, which basically is just a circuit board, because the Apple Ones were a kit that you bought and you put it together.
Were they really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Basically, they did a circuit board, and they had all the chips and stuff already installed on it, and then you added the monitor and the keyboard and all that
stuff.
It
was something like the Tandy?
It didn't even have a case.
Yeah, it sounds like it's like a Zenith kit or a Tandy.
Yeah. Well, the Apple One, they made 175 of those when they first did those, right?
Oh.
These are the ones they actually did build out of their garage.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And the last one just sold recently. Guess how much that sold for? And we're talking about a circuit board, a cassette, a small circuit board for interfacing the cassette, and a power supply.
$300,000.
Try again.
Higher?
Yes.
Oh,
so
my good.
Do I add digits at the end or at the beginning?
Just increase the ones you have.
Tell me.
It fetched $815,000 at an auction.
Wow.
For a few minutes, it was actually up to $1.2 million, but that bid got pulled at the last minute.
And when somebody found their piggy bank wasn't that big.
Yeah.
It wasn't that far off. It wasn't really in the millions, but it was, it's not bad.
Pretty darn close. $800,000.
Yeah. And get this, that particular one doesn't even work.
My goodness.
Now, it can be made to work, but they said it's better off and it holds the value better if you don't fix it.
Now, that actually had the Motorola chipset, right?
Yes, it did.
I think it did.
Well, let's see. I believe it did.
Most of them did at the very beginning, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
They did for a long time.
Yeah. So that was, and that was made back in the summer of 1976.
What was the significance of having the Motorola chipset?
It was cheap and available, and a lot of kids coming out of college, that's what they learned on, were those Motorola chip. I learned on a Motorola, and I went to school in the 80s.
Mm.
So, I mean, and that's why I bought a Commodore, is I learned how to do machine language on a Motorola processor.
And they had some of the fastest processors back at that time.
Mm.
And then as Intel began to leapfrog, it went back and forth.
Yeah, because back then it was TI and Motorola and
you were kidding.
Texas Instrument.
Was that built in the garage by Wozniak and Steve Jobs?
Yes.
I'll be darned. They actually handmade those things?
In the beginning, yeah. They were making them by hand.
100 and how many of them?
170. Well, they started off, I think what they did is they actually built like maybe 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got sales and backing for the difference. And then they started, getting them mass produced.
Fascinating. My goodness. Ed, I want to see if we can do something quick before we get out of here. And that, we've been teasing about this, but where is safe mode in Windows 10? That is, been my, parachute in so many cases.
That's my bane. I wish it was there. And what I'm going to do is I'll put an article on the Internet Advisor's website, probably in the next week.
Okay.
And it'll talk about, I found an article by Ziff Davis that basically described how to make, so that every time you power up your computer, you're given an option to go into safe mode or normal mode. And you could set the timer to be 1 second or 5 seconds or 30 seconds. So if you just power up your computer, you could just set it to do a 1 second delay. Because there's really no way of forcing your computer upon power up to go into safe mode unless you have the USB flash drive where you've created a recovery flash drive, which you can load to Microsoft Diagnostics, or you could do a system restore, or you can go into a Windows safe mode. But there is a way of modifying how Windows starts up so that you can go into safe mode.
All right. So there is a way of getting to it. But all right, you're going to post that, right?
Yes.
All right, folks. That's one more reason for you to take a look at InternetAdvisor.net. Ed will post that for you there, and I'm sure it'll make its way into the toolkit. Guys, thanks so much for being with us. Ed Rudell and Cal Carson, it's been a ball.
Always a pleasure.
And we will probably also, by the next time we get back to you, have the final word, or close to it, perhaps. It'll be a week away yet, about what's happening with the Apple introductions.
Now hold on to your phones. We're going to find out.
We'll be back to see you folks around Labor Day, and we've got some great stuff planned for you there with the CIO of the Tigers talking about some of the great technology at Comerica Park here in Detroit. Have a great weekend and a safe Labor Day as well. On behalf of Gary Baker, this is Foster Brown and all the folks here at the Internet Advisor wishing you a very, very good weekend.